Proverbs 8, verses 10 to 21.
Take my instruction instead of silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her.
I, wisdom, live with prudence, and I attain knowledge and discretion.
The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance and the way of evil are perverted speech I hate.
I have good advice and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength.
By me, kings reign and rulers decree what is just. By me, rulers rule and nobles, all who govern rightly.
I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me.
Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and prosperity.
My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver.
I walk in the way of righteousness, along the paths of justice, endowing with wealth those who love me, and filling their treasuries.
May God add his blessing to the reading of his word.
Well, the text that we're going to look at today is actually the entire chapter of Proverbs 8. I only had them read the first half because it's a bit long. But chapter 8 sets out really a map. It's a map for living our lives well. How to live wisely. That's what the book of Proverbs is all about. So if you're on the younger side, now most of our younger people are out there right now, but that theme of living wisely, how to map out your life, you know, how can we do that? And for us in the middle of years, perhaps somewhere, the seasons, winter, spring, summer, fall, wherever that spiritual season you're in right now, how do we find ourselves, how do we place ourselves on that map right now? Sometimes we feel like we're doing well, we're cruising right along, and other times we feel a little lost. And if you remember Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, Christian finds himself at various times feeling lost, and that can be our experience as well. But wisdom for mapping out our lives, how to make your one life count. Rahner makes that point, that you have one life. You don't have a series of lives. Christian perspective, we're not reincarnated. You don't have 1,000 lives. You have one life. So how do you live your life well? That's Rahner's point. How do you, as a Christian, live your one life well? And Proverbs speaks to that issue. So chapter 8, I'm going to say it falls into five little units, and one of the units is on a wonderful piece on creation. That's why we sang that second song, The Father of Creation, because it speaks to these verses that speak of wisdom's role in the very creation of the cosmos. So there's a lot going on there that's pretty cool. I remember when I was at U of T, I finished Riverdale Collegiate, went to U of T Scarborough College. In the day, Scarborough College was out in the boonies in the far, far east. But in those days, you could cross the city reasonably well on the 401, and it didn't really matter. You could just kind of bomb across. It would be torture to do that now. So if you're thinking of going to Scarborough College, forget it, unless you're going to live out there and maybe in residence. But I remember taking an English course, and one of the first books we read was the book Every Man. That was the title, Every Man, early book. Beth, when was that written? You don't know? You should know. You're a professor of English. You should know that. Anything I send over to you, you just go, yep. It's a play. It's a play, yeah. It's a play called Every Man. Anyways, early, And we could call it every woman, every man, every woman. How do we live our lives? That's the point. So as we begin, we note that throughout the book, it's particularly has an interest in young people and people coming into faith formation. But here in verse one, it says right away that it's not just limited to them, it's for all of us. Verse 4, to you, O people, I call, and my cry is to all that live. So it's not just limited to younger people, it's to every one of us, regardless of our age, regardless of where we are in the spiritual journey, winter, spring, summer, fall. This book is written for all of us. And the invitation is to live wisely. Just don't go through the motions. Won't get caught up and going in circles out there. I remember being in Bolivia one time, and there was a creature, and it was a very odd creature that we don't have up here, but anyway, it has a long tail, an armadillo, I think. But anyway, it was just going around. The tail was long enough that it could see its tail, and literally, it just kept going in circles. Because it knew it was chasing something. It didn't realize it was chasing its own tail. Seriously. And it just kept going and kept going and kept going. Right? I'm thinking, man, I almost went over and stopped it because, this is going to go on forever. Just kept going. He knew that he was close. He just going in circles, going after it. After a while, I lost interest. Maybe it's still doing that down in Bolivia. There's a creature in Bolivia that's going in circles. There it is. Lost its way, that's the point. You and I are invited to live wisely. First unit here. And you note that where we live wisely, verses 2 and 3, it's right in the heart of life. It's at the crossroads of life. It's at the gate. So it's not sitting in your back room and just having all kinds of time to think and whatever else. It's on the heights beside the way at the crossroad she takes her stand, beside the gates in front of the town, at the entrance of the portals, she cries out. The point being is that wisdom is for us in the midst of all of our busyness. In the midst of all that's going on, in the midst of your work projects, whatever they might be, in the midst of your stressed out life, and all of that stuff. Wisdom is exactly for those times. So it's not just a time for, when you're on spiritual retreat and you have time to thumb through the book of Proverbs. It's not for that. It's for us. So for the youth, it's for the stress of exams. When you're in the midst of it all, you're freaking out. This is what wisdom's at. I say at the economic center, when you're working at the mall. My guy that I go to for my clothes, he's down in Cloverdale Mall, a little shop. And Sherway right now is having a hard time, apparently. So they went over to him and said, why don't you come on over and take your shop over here to Sherway. It'll be better for you. You'll do better business. And he says, well, what might rent be? He says, well, we're going to triple your rent. It's going to be three times more than what you're paying here, but that's a bargain. He says, forget it, don't call me back. All right, so that's his story. He could have been maybe over at Yorkdale, the busy, busy, busy place. So that's where wisdom's at. It's a call for us in the busyness of our lives, the stress of our lives, family life. Kids are going everywhere. Hard to keep track of all that's going on. That's where wisdom is. And it's an invitation to live our lives well and to live our best lives, to live your true self and not your false self. So often we settle for our false selves. We fall into a kind of a complacent arrangement. False self is easy. False self has got lots of triggers to just kind of make you feel good, satisfy you. But the true self, the one that's really what your life's all about, That's the invitation for you and for me, to live our true selves, not our false selves, not to waste our lives. Easy to waste our lives. To learn prudence. This word comes up several times in the chapter 8, and indeed through the whole book, prudence. And prudence is specifically to use your reason to make good decisions, to think it out. It's not just an emotional response. Prudence is you're thinking about this. You have a challenge and you're thinking it through. And it acquires intelligence, or needs intellect and experience together. So prudence, can we live prudent lives? Lives that are thought out well, not just a reaction. Remember that we were told that often we just react. Somebody does something to me and we react. And what we're invited to do is not to react, but to thoughtfully respond in some way. There's a difference. And so prudence is that ability to respond with your mind, with your heart, make good choices. So if you're a young person, right, and you're hearing this, you're at school, your teacher's teaching and talking about this kind of stuff, what's our response? Later on, what's our response? So the picture here is what we call the peripatetic teacher. Peripatetic is a Greek word for walking, one who walks around. And so this peripatetic teacher is the one who walks from town to town, offering his courses or her courses on wisdom. And students actually would travel to learn. That was part of the whole deal. Travelers, wisdom teachers would go down, teach area to area to area, and the students would travel to come. That was the invitation. In my years in Bolivia, over the time, I've taught in most of the bigger cities and even average-sized cities in Bolivia. Remember, it's a mountainous country, so there is one seminary in Cochabamba, which is the biggest, but they have satellites throughout the whole country. And the reason for that is it's a difficult country to travel in, it's so mountainous, it takes forever to go 100 miles. And so they have satellite seminaries. So you might travel to Potosí, you might travel to Sucre, wherever, La Paz. You go where the students are in the area, and then they travel to come to hear what you're doing. And so that's the picture here. So the first part then is for everyone, all of us, will we respond? Will we turn our hearts to seek wisdom? That's number one. Second part, it is indeed a path of righteousness, verse 6 to 13, meaning that it is truthful teaching. It's not false teaching, it's not corrupt teaching, it is teaching that speaks the truth. That's what the writer says. You can look at it, verses 6 to 13. It's more valuable than money, silver, or gold. I say better than winning the lottery. So if we look at that and think of that today, would we say that? Is wisdom in your life better than winning the lottery? I think generally people would, they might say yeah, but in reality, no. I would rather have the $1 million in my bank than the wisdom. And I think that's the spirit of our age. So many commercials given over to banking or to winning the lottery. There's one out there right now, there's a couple, and the young woman is on the phone, and she's saying to the man on the other side, "You wouldn't believe it. You cannot believe it. It's happened. It's happened. It's happened. What's happened?" Well, she's finally won the lottery. That's what she's communicating. We can do it. We can now live our dreams. We can just go buy our sailboat and sail the whole world. We can do whatever we want, which is a complete lie, really. You might have the money to do that, but you actually try to pull it off. You might buy the boat and then crash the boat in the first 6 hours of out there. It's difficult to sail a big sailboat, right? Whatever it might be, it's all lies. If I win all the money, I'll just be super, super happy. That'll just introduce a whole new layer of hassles in your life. But yet we say, well, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a try. For me, it'll work out. But the text is saying that wisdom is better than money, better than silver, better than gold. So we ask ourselves, okay, what is that? But maybe there's a moment of pause. Maybe I need to say, I won't do that. I remember, we're all like it. I'm like it, man. I'm totally everywhere messed up as, whatever. I'm in my 40s. My mom. So I say, Mom, I bought a lottery ticket. She would say, Son, how can that be? She liked my preaching, right? She did. My dad never said a word about it, but my mom liked it. My mom would call me up afterwards and say, Alan, that was so wonderful. That was so great. I miss those calls. Anyway, I would say that, and then I say about the lottery ticket. How could you do that? You preach so wonderfully, and now you're buying a lottery ticket. That was like the worst thing to do. So I now confess I don't buy lottery tickets, okay? They're out. I didn't buy them regularly, every week, by any means. But every once in a while, I'd hear there was some $60 million big deal. Oh, I'll put my name in the pot. She would have none of that. No way. Wasn't happening. But, it shows how attached we are to such things. It's easy to say the words. Once again, verse 12, to live prudently. Verse 13 is interesting because remember the phrase, the fear of the Lord, is emphasized in the book of Proverbs, and it normally talks about two things, the awe of God, not being afraid of God, recognizing God's majesty, the awe of God, the glory of God. But then it's connected to the other side, which is intimacy, being intimate with God. That's the fear of the Lord. Awe, glory, but also in a relationship with God because God cares. He cares for us. Marjorie was speaking about that in her prayer. He walks alongside of us. But introduced here now is a new idea, and the idea is the rejection of evil. Notice verse 13. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, particularly pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. Follows with, I have good advice and sound wisdom, I have insight, I have strength. The hatred of evil. That's saying no. Saying no and saying yes to God. It's living your best life, living prudently. The rejection of evil. So we need to hear that because that's new when we think of the fear of God, the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. Old Testament concept meaning walk in relationship with God. Know Him. Follow Him. Remember Jesus' words? Jesus introduces a new metaphor. What does He say? You must be born again. It's a metaphor. You must be born again. Remember, Nicodemus says, how can you pull that off? You can't do that. Can I go back into my mom's womb? I can't do it. Jesus says, hey, man, you're a teacher. You don't get it. You must be born again. You must walk into this deep relationship with the Lord, born again, a new life in God. Proverbs writer is talking about it as the fear of the Lord. It's essentially the same message spread out over thousands of years, different metaphors. We are born again, for sure. I'm not saying we're not. We are born again in Christ. But that resonates with what Proverbs is saying, know the fear of the Lord. So it's becoming your best self. That's the invitation. We've already said that. Choose what is best in your life. So that's second point. Third point, wisdom's rewards. We can move through this a bit faster. Wisdom is a competent guide. I have good advice, sound wisdom. It is strength, it is power, verses 14 and so on there. Go back to 10, but it's also said in 17, wisdom is not hard to find, but we must pursue it. Notice what the Proverbs writer says in 17. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. So it's not a casual look. It is wanting to know God. It is seeking after Him. So I'm saying wisdom is not hard to find, but we must pursue it. We have to want to go after it. And God says, well, when you go after it, you will find it. If you seek me, you will find me. So Jeremiah says, then when you call upon me and come and pray to me, I will hear you. When you search for me, you will find me. If you seek me with all your heart, I will let you find me, says the Lord. It's the same message. So Solomon is writing when? 1,000 years before Christ. And Jeremiah is writing 600 years before Christ. For 400 years, they're still talking about, when you search me, you will find me, if you seek me with all your heart. So there is an intention here for you and for me. We have to intentionally want to know God and go after God. If you don't, then God's voice is lost in all the other voices. How do we hear Him in the midst of all the millions of other voices that are out there? Seek me with all your heart. Better than fine gold. Then it moves to the fourth point, and here is this wonderful piece, verses 22 to 31, on creation. So this is a poem. You could spend a lot of time just sitting with this. Notice how it starts. The Lord created me at the beginning of His work, the first of His acts of long ago. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. When He had not yet made earth and fields, or the world's first bit of soil. When He established the heavens, I was there. When He drew a circle on the face of the deep, I was there. That's this amazing poem on the connection of wisdom and creation. So again, the writer is saying, I'm talking to all of you, but this wisdom has profound implications because it's been there from the very beginning. And we note, verse 22, it starts with the Lord. The writer knows what he's doing. Verse 22, note, the Lord created me. First word is Yahweh. Yahweh created me. And when you go to the end of it, it ends with, and delighting in the human race, humanity. So the writer is writing this poem. It begins with the Lord, first word, and the last word it is humanity. The Lord, humanity. The whole thing is about our relationship with God. God working in creation to reveal Himself. If we have eyes to see, doesn't Psalm 19 says that? The heavens declare the glory of God every night, man. We had some friends up last week for a couple days up at the farm. They dropped in, and that night the Milky Way was right over us. You walk out the door, and there's the Milky Way. And what does Psalm 19 says? The heavens declare the glory of God. So it begins with the Lord, it ends with creation, or humanity, my mistake. It's lovely. The role of wisdom in the creation process. Notice verse 29, the Lord put limits to the sea. When He assigned to the sea its limits, so that the water might not transgress His command, when He marked out the foundations of the earth. Why put an emphasis on that? Because for all the surrounding nations, the sea, there was a goddess of the sea. The sea was chaotic. And so the picture here is that God puts boundaries on the sea so that it's controlled and doesn't flow over all the land. It doesn't just cover the earth. There's enough water out there, right? It could cover the entire globe. Puts restrictions on it. Why? Because the surrounding nations all had gods of the sea. So the writer says, no, God, Yahweh, controls the seas. His wisdom. Wisdom delighted in all of the creative aspects. Someone wrote, if you want to get around in creation, wisdom is a good part. So if you want to see the planet, then see the planet with God. See the planet with Yahweh. See the planet with Jesus in your heart. Don't go solo. Travel with him. He's a good partner. That's what he's writing. And then finally, we have this call to listen. And this is really the key. What's it about, the whole chapter 8? It's not a metaphysical discussion, a philosophical discussion of what wisdom is. What it is an urge for you and for me, an exhortation to listen and to follow. And so in 32 to 36, it sums it up. Listen to me. This is what wisdom is saying. And now, my children, verse 32, listen to me. Happy are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction, which is again, listen to me and be wise and do not neglect it. So listen. Jesus says, you who have ears, listen. If you have ears, open your ears and listen. Many, many, many people heard Jesus and were not listening. They were words that were just bouncing off the shields that every person carries. So if Jesus' words were bouncing off, what about other words, my words? Hear his words. Listen. That's the point. Secondly, life comes as a favor from the Lord. It's a gift. We don't deserve this gift. We've done nothing to get it, right? You were born one day. You had nothing to do with it. It's a favor. The whole thing is a favor from God. So seek wisdom. Act upon it. That's the whole point. Act upon it. Go out and find it. So the writer says. That's where he goes. So we hear, will we listen? In conclusion, we have three points. Wisdom is about the human quest. I think there is a quest. It's Don Quixote out there fighting the windmill, Cervantes. There's a purpose for your life. There's an overarching theme. You exist for a reason. Your story is different from anybody else's. Your quest. And again, it doesn't matter age-wise. We can be older. We can thinking, well, you know, I don't have any quest anymore. No, God is still there. As long as you're alive, he has a quest for you. That's it. When the quest is done, you're done. And we're with the Lord. So there's a purpose. In the midst of it all, to live your best life, to expand your vision, to keep growing, to keep you open, open the eyes of my heart, we sang. Help me, Lord, to experience and to live out the quest, the vision that you have for me. Secondly, we see that it's transformative. I'm not clicking there, Dave. Can you move that one? Wisdom is transformative. Next one. Okay. Anyway, it is transformative. It's transformational. At any point, wisdom can change your life. Wisdom can change your life. I was reading a news piece this week, and it was on guys who were gang members, big, burly guys, and their faces were covered with tattoos, just the way that they were in. And the guy was saying, I'm a gang member. That's me. My parents were gang members. My uncles are gang members. Everybody in my family is a gang member. That's me. And I've been in jail, I've been out of jail, I've done all kinds of heavy crimes, and he goes on to list them. So this is my life. I'm a gang member. But there's one other person who has been a gang member, and now he's changed. And so his mission is to reach out to these people who are so tough, who see themselves as gang members, and to offer them a way to get out of that and to actually be transformed. And the guy, the story goes on to say that he's had success with, I think it was 17 people. You could Google the story. 17 people have been transformed from a life of gang forever and forever into releasing it into new life. So that's pretty incredible. But the gospel is about transforming. Matthew's a tax collector. He's taking advantage of the system. And Jesus says to him, come down the tree and follow me. Well, it's not Matthew. Sorry, who is it? Zacchaeus, right, Zacchaeus. Matthew has his own story. He was a tax collector. But you can change. You can come down from a tree and change. It's transformative. So maybe we need a bit of transformation in our lives. And then thirdly, finally, we see that there's this close connection between wisdom in Proverbs 8 and Jesus in the New Testament. Jesus is now wisdom. Jesus is the face of wisdom. If we want to know wisdom, we look to Jesus. If you want to know about God, the best way to find out about God is Jesus. Jesus in the flesh, God. So, for example, I just want to read one bit from Colossians. Notice how Jesus is described, Colossians 1, 15 to 20, and how it parallels the language of Proverbs 8. He, referencing Jesus, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, all things have been created through him and for him. That's Proverbs 8. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might come to have first place in everything. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. And through him God was pleased, note, to reconcile to himself all things. We don't get that. We don't get that. We have to work that through. And through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. That's an incredible statement about Jesus. And if you read that and then go back to that song of creation in Proverbs 8, you'll see all kinds of parallels. So we've said before that we don't know the whole story of Jesus. We do not. I don't know. You don't know. We do not know. And through him, God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things. So how does that work out? All things. In our view, we'll say, well, I don't know. I get that he reconciles some things. But here he's saying all things. So we won't know how that plays out to the very end, right? We don't know. Theologically, there's a whole understanding about what that means. So some theologians would say, well, everyone. God in his mercy saves everyone. Everyone ultimately is reconciled. In a tradition, the Baptist tradition, we don't see it that way generally. It's some things. Those who turn, those who seek. And there's a logic to that. But you see how it for others that doesn't mean that's not enough. Our position is too small, so we don't know. But Jesus is doing this amazing, amazing, amazing thing, reconciling your life, my life, transformation, a cocoon into a butterfly. So God is there for you, for me. May we have eyes to want to know the Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I think if we really sang that intently, we would keep discovering more and more new things about what God has for us. Open the eyes of my heart. That phrase is from Paul, right? Ephesians. Open the eyes of my heart. I pray that the eyes of your heart will be open, Paul says. Exactly what that song says. So may our eyes be open. May we receive what wisdom, and I'm talking about myself, may we together understand and receive wisdom from God for our lives, for our church, for this community. Wisdom, 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 life, 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 the best life for everyone. In Jesus' name, amen.